Hello and welcome to our blood chemistry module on lipids and the cardiovascular system. And we're going to look at how those lipids and the markers for heart problems and vascular problems manifest in a standard routine blood. And we're going to take a quick look at some more advanced testing that you can do, but we're not going to go into major detail on the advanced stuff. The information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. It's just sharing from me to you, from you to your client, in the effort to identify imbalances and just put stuff back in balance and see what happens. So our cardiovascular system, how do we measure it? Well, everybody's heard about cholesterol, good old cholesterol. It's gotten a bad rap, though. You know, cholesterol is actually a very important molecule in the body. It's important for creating our steroid hormones. It's responsible for helping inflammation in the blood vessel walls. The unfortunate thing is that the cholesterol goes out to patch up holes in the walls, basically, and other things attached to it. So there's ways that we can actually make cholesterol healthier. So you can't just think about cholesterol as the bad guy. Cholesterol has a lot of great functions. And without it, you wouldn't have your sex hormones, you wouldn't have your cortisol being produced, and you would die. So cholesterol is important. The whole concept of get your cholesterol down as low as possible is a bit ridiculous because we don't do that with other things. We look at getting them within a range that's workable. Sometimes people will push their cholesterols and try to get them down too far, and then they don't make enough steroid hormones and they end up with hormone imbalances. Triglycerides are fats. We talked about those at length in our macronutrients module. And if you want to review that, I would highly recommend that you go back to the macronutrients and learn about these fats and about their structures and the sterol rings and the glycerides and how they are put together and what's going on with them. Lipoprotein is, as we talked about in our macronutrients module, lipoprotein is a lipid and a protein put together. High density means there's more protein. The protein's dense. It's not as light and fluffy as the fat. Low density means there's less protein and more fat. Very low density means there's very little protein and a lot of fat. So these are the different kinds of lipoproteins, and they all have different functions. We're going to talk today about how you detect these things, and we'll have a cardiovascular module where we'll go into a lot more detail about what they are, what their structure is, how they work, and all of that. So these are the things we can measure. The other thing we can measure is CRP, C-reactive protein. We usually do the one that's CRP-HS, CRP highly sensitive. And the CRP is a marker of inflammation. And in particular here with the HS, it's picking up inflammation in the blood vessel lining, in the blood vessel wall, which means that if there's some inflammation in a blood vessel wall and cholesterol comes floating along, it's going to get attracted there. When the cholesterol gets attracted there and then some calcium comes along, it's going to get attracted to the cholesterol. And when all of this comes together, it can form what's called a plaque. So we think about the fact that cholesterol is bad, but really it's trying to do its job and patch up your artery walls. So what we really need to do is prevent ourselves from getting the nicks in the artery walls. Part of that is blood sugar balance. Big part of that is blood sugar balance. So the other thing we measure, we talked about homocysteine. Homocysteine is part of the methylation pathways, and homocysteine will get elevated in a B6, B12, or folate deficiency, and also in blockages in the methylation pathways. And then we have apolipoprotein A and B. And these are really important measures. They're not done very often, but they are done on a complete cardiac profile. And the one we're going to look at is called the VAP. So let's talk a little bit more about these cardiovascular markers. We know what cholesterol is. We talked about that. It's a sterol hormone. It's a precursor to a lot of other hormones. It's got a sterol ring, and it has some anti-inflammatory properties. HDL, high-density lipoproteins, they take cholesterol away from the cells and transport it back to the liver to be removed. They often call this the good cholesterol. LDL, on the other hand, is low-density lipoprotein, and it takes cholesterol and it deposits it in the artery walls. We call that the bad cholesterol. In reality, LDL isn't being bad. It's doing its job, which is to take the cholesterol out to repair the artery wall. The cholesterol-HDL ratio is a relative risk for cardiovascular disease. And this ratio I do like. I think it's very accurate, as well as the triglyceride-HDL ratio. I like that one too. Okay, it's pretty straightforward. So the higher that number, the higher your risk. The lower that number, the lower your risk. So you've got a hefty dose of HDLs with a decent dose of cholesterol, you're going to get a really nice ratio. Triglycerides are fats that are in the blood, but they're storage forms of fat, so they can carry calories around the body and provide energy. When you eat sugar, it raises your triglycerides. I know a lot of people, some relatives of mine included, think that having a breakfast of whole grain bread and orange juice is super healthy. In reality, it's not, and it causes the formation of a lot of triglycerides because of all the sugar. The triglyceride HDL ratio is one of the best ones for indicating a level of insulin resistance. The lower it is, the earlier the stage of insulin resistance. The ideal being 1:1. So, triglycerides 75, HDL 75. Triglycerides 85, HDL 85. Seems to work really well that way. CRPHS is an indication of endothelial inflammation on the inside part of the blood vessels. Homocysteine, part of the methylation cycle, and it's an independent risk factor for cardiac. So it's not just the fact that it's part of, because it disrupts the methylation, it actually in and of itself creates an increased risk for cardiac disease. Then we have CPK, which is creatine phosphokinase. And that image, and that indicates when there's damage to the cardiac muscle. So let's talk about C-reactive protein. It increases during systemic inflammation. It gets lower. It's associated with lower survival rates in patients with unstable angina and heart attack. What's unstable angina? Well, angina, some people call it angina. You call it angina, I call it angina. Doesn't matter. So it's basically a situation where the heart is just like, becomes ischemic and then relaxes. So ischemic meaning it has a little like contraction, closed down the vessel, but not completely. So it's a heart attack and then it relaxes and you get really severe pain. High levels of CRP increases the risk that an artery will close after it's been opened by balloon angioplasty. Balloon angioplasty is a, I think, somewhat barbaric process, but the artery ends up getting very clogged and they go in there and they just blow a balloon into it. And I can attest to the fact that once they do that, they don't necessarily talk to the person about their risks now. My father-in-law had one years ago, probably close to 8 or 10 years ago. And they basically did not tell him anything about how he should eat. He was diabetic and he was in the hospital and they were feeding him saltine crackers. I mean, come on. That's kind of ridiculous. So high levels of CRP predict prognosis and recurrent events in patients with stroke and peripheral artery disease. What does that mean? Well, prognosis meaning predictive capability, and recurrent events meaning having the stroke or the heart attack again. And so they said that the high levels of CRP will basically says bad prognosis, they're probably going to have another stroke or heart attack or peripheral artery disease. High levels of CRP increase the risk of heart attack. The upper third has the double the risk of the lower. Can you imagine that? So if you cut the number of people in thirds, the upper third has double the risk of what's in the lower third just because their CRP levels are high. So there's studies that found association between sudden death, peripheral artery disease, and highly sensitive CRP. I often wonder if my mom and dad had had those tests done and if anybody chatted with them because they were victims of this sudden heart attack. And we know that whatever was going on had been brewing for a long time, but still. Let's talk homocysteine. High homocysteine levels in the blood can damage the lining of the arteries. B6, 12, and folate have been found to be associated with it. And green leafy vegetables can all lower. They push those pathways. So fruits and vegetables. And if you've got somebody who's trying all this and it's not working, that's when we need to look at their genetics. Creatine phosphokinase. This is a very important enzyme. It's, again, it's not specific to the heart, but it's found mainly in the heart, brain, and skeletal muscle. And it's elevated when there's been significant damage to cardiac tissue. So it means a heart attack or something like that. What happens is the CPK elevates to try to repair and help things along. CPK is another one that has isoenzymes. 1, 2, 3, and 4. One is mostly brain and lungs. 2 is mostly in the heart. 3 is mostly in the skeletal muscle. So if we have a high level of creatine phosphokinase, we don't want to jump to the conclusion that there's something wrong with the heart. So we do this test. One of the things you have to be aware of is heavy exercise will induce this. And it's temporary, but it will induce this enzyme. And it's mainly geared towards what? Your skeletal muscle, not your heart. So what I recommend is that if somebody's going to take a test and they're testing CPK, make sure they don't exercise before they go to the lab. This was another one. My poor husband gets the brunt of so many of these things. We'd gotten him to go to the lab. He has a history in his family of heart disease. We wanted to check him out. He goes to the lab. He gets it back. And his CPK was really high. Really high. And I talked to the lab and they said, well, did he exercise before he went to the lab? And I said, oh, I don't think so. I mean, he left early in the morning. Anyway, figured out, came to it. He had run like 5 or 6 miles. And that's what it was. It was picking up the damage to those muscles at the time. So you have to be careful about when they do it. So the conditions that can lead to it, lipid abnormalities, thyroid. Like a lot of people who have low thyroid hormone will have high cholesterol. And they're looking like, why do I have high cholesterol? I'm eating all this great food and I'm exercising, but why is my cholesterol high? Well, hypothyroid will increase the cholesterol levels. Adrenal stress, same thing. You know, when you're stressed with your adrenal, sometimes that conversion from the cholesterol down to pregnenolone that we've talked about in other talks, that's the main steroid hormone, it doesn't happen real well. And so the cholesterol just builds up. And adrenal stress, right? We have high levels of high blood pressure, things like that contribute. Insulin resistance for sure, and that it damages the vessel linings and it can cause stiffenings. So that can contribute to lipid abnormalities. Diabetes for sure, fatty liver, biliary stasis meaning that the bile's just not moving. Poor fat metabolism, hypoglycemia, nutrient imbalances, and even multiple sclerosis. All of these can contribute to imbalances in our lipids in different ways. So you got to keep these things in mind when you're doing a history on someone. Nobody really talks much about low cholesterol. There are a few studies that talk about the cholesterol going too low and people getting really depressed. And I can see why, right? Because if the cholesterol does go too low, you're not going to be able to make your steroid hormones. And so your hormones are going to be all out of whack. And what happens when your hormones get out of whack, right? You know this with PMS, you know it with menopause, that when the hormones are out of balance, that people get depressed, they get irritable, they get anxious. So low cholesterol can cause that too. Low cholesterol can happen as a result of heavy metal and chemical overload. It can happen as a result of liver biliary congestion, gallbladder dysfunction. So the body's just not processing it right and it's eliminating it. Somebody who's just on a really excessively low-fat diet and exercising a lot can lower their cholesterol quite a bit. Hyperthyroid will lower the cholesterol because hypothyroid raises it, so hyper just burns it up. And autoimmune processes, so it can be any number of these things. And we want to be able to look at, well, why is the cholesterol low? It's not just like, wow, you have a cholesterol of 95, isn't that awesome? No, it has a lower limit. And I'm looking, and based on what I'm seeing, you know, somewhere in the 140, 150 should be the lowest it should be, right? 120, it might be a little too low, but also it's clinical picture. If everybody's happy and healthy and, you know, they look great and they feel great and their hormones are in balance, then sure, if they can do that with a cholesterol of 140, great. But most people can't. Most people, you know, that 150 to 175 seems to be the sweet spot. So I want to talk briefly about something called the Vertical Analyzer Panel, and we'll go more into this on our advanced section, our advanced blood chemistry, because this is enough. There's a lot here. On the VAP test, we generally measure a whole slew of things that we don't on a routine test. Routine test measures LDL, which is a calculation, it's not even direct, HDL, triglyceride, and total cholesterol. With the VAP, they directly measure the LDL. They measure HDL, triglyceride, and cholesterol. They also measure VLDL, non-LDL lipoproteins, right? Apolipoprotein B, lipoprotein little a, intermediate density lipoprotein, low density lipoprotein, and various subclasses, various remnant lipoproteins, and we'll get into that in more detail in another time, and metabolic syndrome. There's actually some ratios that they do to see what the risk is for you at metabolic syndrome. And then there's actually two different kinds of HDL. It's not just HDL, but it's two different kinds of sub, and some one is more protective than the other. So you get a very good picture. So if you're working with anybody who has a history of heart attack, who has a family history of heart attack, is concerned about their heart, has had some abnormal lipid panels, I would say this is a good panel to do. It seems like it would be very expensive, but generally it's not. And Life Extensions does these specials on a regular basis, and they frequently put the VAP on special. Direct Labs has it as well. So it's definitely a good test to do whenever those risk factors exist. I've done this on quite a number of patients, and I've also done it on my husband. And it's when we did this that we stopped freaking out about his cholesterol being so high, because it actually looked quite good, quite good. So it's the familial hypercholesterolemia where he's doing a great diet, he's doing a great lifestyle. He can afford to lose a few pounds and be a little bit more careful about his stress, but we were very pleased when we did this for him. Now, if I'd seen some things, there are actually like protocols that you can do for each of these. So I'll show you briefly what they are. And you can read through this. We're not going to go through it in detail. There's the direct LDL. There's the total HDL. There's the total very low density cholesterol. And that's a major carrier for triglycerides and very much puts somebody at the risk for heart disease. Then they do a sum of the HDL, LDL, and VLDL. And the that's not really a great predictor by itself. They do the direct measure of the triglycerides. They look at total non-HDL cholesterol. So everything that's not HDL, figuring that HDL is the protective, the rest of it is not. What's the total number? What's the risk here? They also look at ApoB1, apolipoprotein B100, which helps to form, carry, and deliver bad cholesterol particles to the cells. So if this is elevated, you're at a higher risk. Lipoprotein little a is an inherited risk factor for heart disease. And some people just have it. They can't control it by lifestyle. It doesn't respond to traditional LDL lowering drugs. And you just have to work around it and do everything else you can to protect yourself if you're in that. It doesn't mean you're definitely going to have a heart attack, believe me. So the intermediate density lipoproteins, this again, a risk factor. And it's elevated in people with family histories of diabetes. The real cholesterol, as a new concept in here, is the cholesterol that's actually circulating, and it's part of the LDL. The sum of total of the LDL-C, so that's the IDL plus the real cholesterol, and the lipoprotein little a, and that's another risk factor, which we'll go into when we go through this in more detail. Real LDL size pattern. Well, how big is that LDL? I mean, is it really low density or is it medium low density? So it actually looks at the size particles, which they've found to be predictive in risk factors. With the metabolic syndrome, they take a look at some markers. And what they look at is the ratio between HDL and HDL2. They look at the elevated triglycerides and they help to create a risk factor for diabetes. So of course we look at the triglyceride HDL ratio, but they're also looking at the ratio between HDL and HDL2, with HDL2 is the protective form. And HDL3, it's there, but it doesn't really seem to confer specific protection as does the HDL2. And the VLDL3, very low density, it's very triglyceride rich, and it's a risk factor for cardiac disease. So you kind of can do these patterns and you can see, really, how high is the risk, right? Just looking at the cholesterol, the total cholesterol doesn't mean anything. Just looking at the cholesterol HDL ratio is just of low specificity. But when you look at the VAP, you get a lot of great stuff. And they give you a little chart. So if somebody has an elevated LDLR, you want to make sure that they are on a low-fat diet and doing exercise. The lipoprotein, little a, there's nothing really you can do therapeutically. Just protect yourself in other ways. The IDLDL, low-carbohydrate diet and exercise. You see, there's different patterns based on different ways that it expresses. Small density, low carbohydrate, reduced sugar, exercise seems to be a common thing. HDL2, if it's low, you can bring it up with aerobic exercise. The VLDL, low carbohydrate, reduced sugar. So you can see that there's not a lot of them that really are calling for the very low fat diet. But you know, there's a lot of these heart studies where people are put on these super low fat diets and they do well. Well, the ones they report do well. I think there's specific people that need to have that very low-fat diet and other people who don't, who do well with a higher-fat diet. I think it has things to do with these parameters, these VAP parameters, all the different lipoproteins, et cetera. But it also, I think it has to do with some of the genetics. Some of the genetics play into this whole apolipoprotein. So there's a marker in the genes called ApoE, apolipoprotein E. And that specific one, if you've got 4-4 in your genetic expression of that, puts you at very high risk of heart disease and really need to have that very low fat diet. So not everybody needs to go on those severe Pritikin and McDougall and Esselstyn type diets. Those are great diets, but they aren't for everybody. And some people develop hormonal problems and other kind of brain issues when they don't get enough fat. So it'd be nice when you can do a VAP like this and you can do the genetic profiling and be able to predict which person needs the higher fat diet versus the lower fat diet. We know all this stuff. What do you do? What do you do based on what you find? Get rid of the smoking, lose weight, exercise, balance your omegas. Red yeast rice and niacin can be helpful supplements in some people. Red yeast rice is controversial because it actually works kind of like a statin drug, but it's a natural statin. So I don't generally use that unless it's a really severe situation. I do use niacin, and it does work better with the flush niacin, not the non-flush niacin. Again, you don't go too high on doses. Studies show that if you get too high on the doses for too long, you can cause some liver problems. Flax oil, yeah, dietary fiber, plant sterols. There are all kinds of things you can do. We look at our fats. In this particular case, we have the triglyceride HDL looks great. The cholesterol looks great. The HDL LDL looks great. This one looks absolutely awesome. So these are the ranges that you're looking for. So for homocysteine, you want it between 4 and 10. I like it lower. And all the studies and functional medicine docs are looking at this and saying, yeah, I like to see homocysteine like 5. You know, 10 is really on the borderline. It's too high. Sed rate, that's the inflammatory marker. It goes between 0 and 20. We want it as close to 0 as possible. Same thing with CRP. Although the range goes to up to 3, I very frequently see people with 0.2, which is what I really want to see, right? Low inflammatory markers. And then you have your apolipoprotein A and B, and they have their ranges, minimum and maximum. And they're pretty similar. I don't think there's differences. No, there's no differences between what's considered the pathological and the functional. I don't think enough studies been done to point that out. We know all the things that damage the cardiovascular system: sugar, high fructose corn syrup, processed grains, fruit juice, inflammatory foods, alcohol. Trans fats are killer. Trans fats are what cause those little nicks in the artery walls that the cholesterol goes and tries to repair, and then the calcium finds its way there, and next thing you know, a heart attack happens. So those are the things that we most want to avoid as far, and in addition to the sugars, which create increases in the triglycerides and decreases the density of those lipoproteins. These are foods that support. You've seen these before. I'll mention a few specifics. The B vitamins are super important, especially niacin tends to be very important here with protecting the cardiovascular system. Vitamin C and E as antioxidants. CoQ10 is a mitochondrial enzyme that's really phenomenal. And a lot of folks who have been on statins are depleted of CoQ10 because statin drugs do deplete CoQ10. Our good old friends, EPA and DHA, the omega-3s. Hawthorn berry deserves a little attention because it's a really cool herb, and it's really supportive in the liver, and it breaks down fat. One of my herbal teachers once said that when he was studying in China, he found that what they would do at the end of the day in the Chinese restaurants to clean the grease off the table, they would make hawthorn berry tea because it was so good at cutting fat. So that's why it's considered good for the cardiovascular system, plus it strengthens the cardiac muscle. Minerals, especially magnesium and zinc, are especially important for the cardiovascular. Arginine, you got to be careful that you don't throw the arginine lysine ratio off, but arginine is a precursor to nitric oxide, which helps to really dilate those blood vessels. Nattokinase, and that's from a food called natto, which is a fermented soybean. I discovered recently that you can actually do it with chickpeas. A friend of mine did that. So if you're sensitive to soy and don't like to eat soy, you can do chickpeas. But it basically creates this enzyme. It's sticky and gooey and it tastes horrible, but it breaks down plaques. And it was first discovered by a guy who is a Japanese eating his natto in the lab. He wasn't supposed to, and he was using some plates and he dropped some natto on one of the plates and he watched it. It was just this amazing anticoagulant. Serrapeptidase, same thing. It's an enzyme that really is good at breaking down plaques. Garlic, ginkgo, and turmeric. So these are really protective for the cardiovascular system. So if you're seeing a lot of things out of balance here, especially if you've done a VAP and you see some of these things that, you know, tendencies that these people have towards this genetic, then that's the way to go. Heart-friendly diet and lifestyle, same thing. We talk about this a lot. Whole foods, fat balance, sugar balance, beware of medications, manage stress and exercise. So I just threw those in there just to kind of tie it all together. And that wraps up what we're doing here with the cardiovascular system.